everyone, and welcome to episode one of the Respecting the Beer podcast. My name is Gary Arndt, and with me today are the proprietors of the McFleshman's Brewing Company in Appleton, Wisconsin, Bobby Fleshman and Allison McCoy Fleshman. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Fantastic.
What we're going to do in this podcast is we're going to talk about everything and anything dealing with brewing and beer over the course of the show. But for the first episode, we kind of want to establish the origin story, just like you do in any good movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and how you get to a point of running a brewery, how you set one up from becoming just a fan of beer and brewing. Because it's an interesting story. I think a lot of people may see themselves in it. Maybe they're home brewers. Maybe they just love beer. And how do you get from that point of a passion for beer to turning it into something real where you're making beer on a regular basis and selling it to the public? So where does this begin? How do you go? What is the starting point?
Okay. First of all, thanks, Gary, and my team here for putting this together and having such a wonderful voice to introduce us. Where does our story begin? Maybe it's my introduction to beer in general. Maybe it's where I was living on a farm in 1980. I was 4 years old. We had, 8,000 acres of wheat fields. And so we brought crews through and they harvested this wheat, and at night they would play quarters. And if you guys are familiar with quarters, it's a game where you put quarters into a bowl by bouncing them, and then there's rules by which people drink around the table. I remember being 4 years old, one of my earliest memories, and my parents were around the table, and there were these styrofoam cups, and they were drinking something. I was interested. These were people that I met in the summertime, and they would come and go each year. And I wanted to be involved, wanted to play this game. So at some point, they said, give them a shot. And they gave me a quarter, explained it to me, and I bounced a quarter in a bowl. And they said, okay, so right, we're going to have to play by the rules. So they gave me some beer. It was some Coors Original or Banquet, made famous by Smokey and the Bandit movie. And they gave me the tiniest amount, probably no more than an ounce. But I remember the taste still. I remember being smitten by it. And fast forward to where we are today, I think I've always had a love for beer, but that was an awkward moment for everyone in the room. I related to an episode of King of the Hill where they gave Bobby a carton of cigarettes to convince him that he didn't want to smoke, and then he became hooked on it. It wasn't as extreme as that, but I related to that moment. But I mean, it's hard to know where to start, but that beer is something that's sort of been in my blood, even though my family wasn't the family of brewers per se. We were from Oklahoma, and so not even from a brewing region.
And so you're a 4-year-old beer drinker, and where do you go from there?
Yeah. So you fast forward a lot of years, because at that point in the world, it was all industrial lager.
And
so,
before you go any further, I grew up in Wisconsin. This was a very strong Germanic culture. Going to the tavern was something that was very common. You might give a kid a sip of beer or something like that. And like most kids, I hated it. Like, you taste that for the first time and it's something that you don't enjoy. Did you actually like enjoy it, or was it this like, I just want to be like the grown-ups?
Beer is the social beverage. It's the social lubricant. So maybe there's a part to both of those truths. I think I enjoyed it, and I think that I wanted to be part. But no, I intrinsically liked it. But you're asking about what's next. There's a lot of years of growing up around beer. Didn't really drink much beer, honestly, growing up. Didn't enjoy it particularly. So maybe there's some answers to your questions there. I quickly realized that it was all the same, you know, as most people did in the craft that came to be craft brewers. And it was boring, even if it was consistent. Most beer was just boring. So, you know, I'd let it sit, and I fast forward to probably about 1999. I discover various craft beverages such as Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Is that true? No, because you were, when I first started dating you, and that was in 2002, You were obsessed with one particular beer.
Right. Yeah, my first.
Michelob Amber Bock.
I wouldn't say it's my first, but yeah, the one that I really threw myself into was Michelob Amber Bock.
To the point when we were in Hawaii one time, we found a big ass mirror that we actually bought that had Michelob Amber Bock, and we struggled to get it into the suitcase to get it back on the plane because you were obsessed with that beer.
Yeah. I think it was for two reasons. It did have some flavor relative to a non-caramelized version of the same beer, but also the branding. And that you find that to be true with a lot of German brands, even though this isn't any longer a German brand. It did draw me in. I was marketed to, and that's true.
But that's like a mass-produced beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a craft beer.
100%.
Right. And what was it that was so special about it? Was it just that they were doing something different, that it was available?
So they were clearly responding to the first wave of craft brewers. And Sierra Nevada is the most notable of those. And they were just capitalizing on it. They had access to tap handles everywhere. And so all they had to do is become a, quote, craft brewer overnight. And you have someone like me who was misinformed, thinking that this is somehow truly a different process, truly a different product. When it was only slightly different, in all honesty. You drink with your eyes first. This was amber, and it did have some caramel flavor added. And so by that definition, it was I wouldn't say craft, but it was definitely more a crafty beer.
And I would say, like, through the 70s and 80s, I think the United States was known for major beer producers. You had the Millers, the Budweisers, the Coors, like you mentioned. And based on kind of my memory of it, you start to see these craft beers appear in like the early 90s, mid 90s. And so was that kind of when you started to pay more attention?
Right. And remember, I'm from Oklahoma. This is probably the last state to see anything craft. So
yeah, there were some pretty significant liquor laws. And so Oklahoma is one that you could only brew 3.2% or lower.
You couldn't refrigerate it.
And you couldn't refrigerate it.
So, okay,
yeah.
You find the Michelob Amber Bock. Where do you go from there? So you said you were misinformed at the time. How did you figure that out? Or what did you discover that took you like, oh, there's something better than this?
And that's where I think it deserves credit, and probably not just with me. Whether it was craft or crafty, it got me into what would later become actual craft beer because it broke the mold. And like I said,
to answer his question, I think we just started trying at that point. Right. We would travel a lot, go down to Texas, and Texas had much better access to varieties and stuff. And so we would buy a bottle here, buy a bottle there, and just start to try new things. And we even had a bottle
Shiner
collection.
Shiner Bock
is huge. Well, it's from Shiner Bock or mm-hmm. Shiner, Texas. But I think just trying new things. And then as we would travel, we started to discover that there were these little breweries around. I remember we went to New Orleans and we went to
Abita.
Yes. And so I think having access and just going to where there was actually beer is also what sparked it.
So let's take a step back. You said you guys met in like 2002, roughly?
Yes.
Correct.
How? Because there's
I was wearing an eye patch at the time.
So
does this talk like a pirate day?
No. I'd scratch my cornea. No, I was a undergraduate at University of Oklahoma. Bobby was an undergraduate at Oklahoma City University, and we did a summer research program through the physics department at OU. And it was love at first. No, it really wasn't. I was actually wanting to flirt with another guy, but I'd scratched my cornea, and so I was wearing an eye patch. But we'd played a game of Ultimate Frisbee with all the participants.
That stereotype is true. Physicists, scientists play Ultimate Frisbee.
That is true.
So, and the reason I ask is because science is actually a big part of this story.
Right.
Where it probably isn't for most brewers, and most scientists are probably, if you guys know, I'm guessing, probably find this career path to be kind of interesting. Or at least different. Speak of that route. How it took you from the world of science to beer.
Right. So let's see, when did I, so we were in the process of discovering craft beer, but then in graduate school, it became a hobby for me. I met someone else that was brewing and we would do just stovetop, basically just big pots of soup in a way. We were doing this. I was getting into it. I was enjoying it. I didn't have any fantasies, I don't think, at that time of a brewery. I think I was just amazed by it.
No, we actually, in your, after your general exam, so when you're getting your PhD, you normally pick up a hobby or two that you could like actually do and finish in a reasonable amount of time because the PhD takes so freaking long to complete. And so his gift to himself after he got his general exam was a homebrew kit inspired by a friend of ours who was brewing. And I remember you recorded your video, a video of you very first homebrew ever, and you forgot half the ingredients. So you have video of this,
right?
Bobby realizing like the brew is done. He's so excited. And he's like, wait, what is this? And it's like malt bag sitting on the counter.
2005, making videos with these old video, whatever they were, they were tiny video cassettes. It was a laborious process doing and trying to record and edit whatever that looks like. And for my notes, because I knew I would not remember to write everything down. So I thought I'll just record this big disaster. And sure enough, it took me 4 hours to do something that should have taken an hour and a half. And then I remember being so proud and triumphant and then catching my face go white when I recognized half of the sugar malt was not actually inside of the beer. I forgot half of the ingredients. So it came out to be very, very low alcohol. I loved it when it was finished because like you do your children, no matter how ugly, it still felt like a triumph at the end of the day. Everyone around the room, even at that point, smiled and drank it, but I can't even imagine going back and tasting that today. But no, it was a hobby. It got my mind off of other things because going through the general exams is a stressful time, and it was a way for me to just have fun. And then my friend, his name was Larry Maddox. I should mention this guy. He was the first one I ever brewed with. If you want to say that homebrewing was my first brewing experience, he sold me his equipment when he got out of it. And I got deeper and deeper into it. And I realized at some point that just like with when I was, we'll talk about this, but when I was a physicist, you can never learn all of physics, contrary to my naivety going into that. I'll just do physics and then move on to the next thing. No, you just have to drill as far as you want to drill, as far as sustainable. And that's what I was doing with beer. And I realized there's a lot of science here. And there's a lot of engineering here. And there's a lot of artistic, there's creativity here. There's a million different disciplines that come into play. And then when you open a business, you get into marketing and sales and advertising. And you have to consider all these things and how far you can push yourself, how much you can absorb and execute on. But I was, enjoying it more and more. I can fast forward even a little farther to explain why I went as far as thinking about opening a brewery.
You said you're studying physics.
Yeah.
You're not studying food science. You're not studying organic chemistry, something that would seem to be a more, you know, something closer related to brewing beer. What were you studying?
Right. I was studying to be a planetary scientist. I went that way by way of astrophysics. My University of Oklahoma is where I got my PhD officially, but my thesis advisor was from Boulder, Colorado. So I lived in Boulder. That's a long commute. It's an 11-hour commute.
But it was actually quite fun for me to go back and forth too. Lots of ski trips.
So I was studying to be a planetary scientist. I studied galaxies. I did some on solar evolution. I did various different projects along the way.
But you started out on cosmology, actually.
Cosmology,
that was the summer
research which
that,
was
when we met.
Looking at supernova. And there are a lot of things that I did back in the day, you know, to find my way in the field. But I found an advisor that worked with NASA that lived in Boulder. Her name is Fran Baganall. And she still works with the Division of Outer Planets for NASA. So all the gas giants outside of Mars orbit. I met her at a meeting. I funded my own way to a meeting and met up with her, and we became good friends. She's an expat from England, and
she has very particular taste
very
in
particular
beer.
Yeah, and Scott.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah,
meeting her and living in her house or basement—I don't know—was kind of one of the inflection points that brought you here. What happened with that?
It was, yeah. Fast forward a tiny bit there. I moved in with her and did obviously do research. We were working on Saturn missions, Jupiter missions, studying the moons of those planets. But that was sort of by day. That was the day job. The weekend job was making beer in her basement. So that was paying my room and board. I didn't ever spend a dime to live downtown Boulder. And if you guys have ever been to Boulder, you'll know how expensive and how awesome of a community it is. But for me to live essentially for the cost of making 10 gallons of beer a week in someone's basement was a pretty awesome experience. I got to do that and then be immersed within a really awesome culinary and brewing scene in that region. You run into places like Avery Brewing Company, which was just a bike ride away, and that's a really fantastic brewery out there. Another one that no one's heard of, Asher Brewing, amazing. Go up the road, you go to the home of
was Fort Collins,
Dale's Pale Ale, and I'm thinking of Oscar Blues. And then up from there, you go to you find New Belgium, and then one of my favorite breweries in the world is Odell. Those are some places I was starting to discover what real beer was. So I had.
Not only that, we were discovering what breweries were.
Right.
Because in Oklahoma, there were really two, maybe three. But when you were living in Boulder.
And they were from the first craft movement in the 80s and 90s.
And living in Boulder allowed us to go explore. And you were there for 8 months. And then on and off, you would go up there commuting over about 3 or 4 years. Yeah. And so it was an opportunity to really see and taste so many different styles. And the wonderful thing about Boulder and Fort Collins is that some of those breweries could subspecialize. And so there was a brewery that just did sours, or Odell, like that in New Belgium for, oh my gosh, that brewery is amazing as well. And so we kind of got to see all these different breweries in different stages. And I think that's where we were exposed to this other world of kind of being the brewery hunters, not just the beer, but also going after, like, well, what is an experience? Like, what's a destination sort of thing?
Because that was really the beginning of the next big wave of craft brewing. It may not have begun in Fort Collins and Boulder and Lyons and Longmont, but it definitely was alive and well there. So I was seeing that you can brew 15 gallons at a time, or you can brew 150 barrels at a time. There were so many different models you could. There was also a giant Anheuser-Busch brewery right there in Fort Collins. So you get to see all the full spectrum. The water's fantastic there. That's a marketing campaign that Coors capitalizes on. I should say that, yeah, if you go just south of Boulder, that's the home of Coors, and they have the largest refrigerator in the world. That was an interesting spectrum of breweries.
So when you're visiting these breweries, are you going there just to hang out and drink? Or are you actually getting to know the brewers and learning about what they do and how they do it?
A little of both.
We weren't getting to know them. We were just consumer experiencers of the beer.
Yeah. Can we get a tour scheduled or not? And usually you're not talking to someone that's making the beer. It's front of house. But the small ones, there was a person behind the counter that does it all. Do we want to talk about?
Well, when did we first start to want to open a brewery? I don't even remember.
Did I confess it, or when did think it?
But no, you started to win homebrew competitions, and our homebrew club called the Yeasty Boys, they got
which
mad.
There were girls. In,
there were.
So it was
there
awkward.
Were two of us. You started to like win those competitions, and they got mad that they told you, if I recall correctly, they're like, you can't enter anymore, Bobby, because you're just going to automatically win, and that's not fair.
Well, I think this is where my technical side was winning over. You know, it's a group of maybe 30 total members. My technical side allowed me to just read recipes and execute on them. There wasn't a lot of artistry there. I was still feeling out, what does it mean to be a pale ale? What does it mean to be an IPA? What is a porter? And I was just executing. And I realized, okay, I'm technically a good brewer, but I don't know the first thing about how to start from scratch. I don't know where beer has been, where it's going.
And it was also a really good group, and like we all shared recipes, but we shared techniques, and we even did experiments with, you know, each other, where we all have to start with the same batch, and then we do different things to it to see what would happen, like brewing it or fermenting it at different temperatures. And so there was, I don't know, I think we were all excited to play But I still don't know when we decided to open a brewery.
Well, like I said, there was a confession date and then there was a think date.
Well, let's go back to this because I think this is interesting. If you look at like a Michelin star chef, there is a process they have to go through of working in a restaurant. They might start scrubbing the dishes and they got to be a sous chef or something. And basically, you got to get your reps in.
Yeah.
And what you're describing sounds like, okay, you could be a really good cook at home. You could take a cookbook and you could make Julia Child's beef bourguignon or something like that. But then there's another step where you're coming up with the recipes, where you know enough about everything that goes in, where you can figure, oh, this would go with this. And so was this sort of just like your elementary education in brewing?
And this was the book off the shelf at Barnes and Noble, just putting my toe in the water of what is beer. And at that point, I'm sure I did start to come up with my own recipes. There was information on the internet.
Oh, I could totally take over on this story. I remember. So one, it was Brewing Classic Styles by, was it Papazian?
Jamil Zainchef.
So that was one. But in our homebrew shop, it was called Learn to Brew in Moore, Oklahoma.
Of the tornado.
Yep. Tornadoes going through all the time there. But he had an all grain section. His name was Chris.
Should explain all grain.
Oh, all grain's when you start with the grain and you only use all grain. You're the brewer. Go.
Yeah, you can start with a can of extract made famous by the Prohibition era.
Which if you are starting homebrewing, that's the way to start.
Yeah.
But if you want to do recipe development, move over to all grain once you kind of get the technique down. But what Bobby would do is he would walk in and it would take forever. I swear I waited so long. And he would walk in and just like put his hands in one of the bins of grain, eat on it for a little while, walk to the next one and he'd add a little bit of this grain and that grain. And it took him forever just to pick the damn grain. But what he was doing, I think at least, was he was like starting to understand flavors from like a foundational level. And then
for at least wanting to understand them.
Right. And now that I know you now as a brewer, I see that recipe development happen. When you taste grain, you're actually tasting the finished product.
So but we're kind of talking about recipe development. You end up talking to brewers, sharing secrets, going on the internet. There's another piece of this story though, and that's like owning a brewery and brewing as a professional. Those dues are paid not by making recipes, because a brewery doesn't want you to walk in and start making recipes. And when you start making beer that they already sell, there was a German brewery a few miles north of our house in Oklahoma, and a really good one. It had been there since I think the late 80s, mm-hmm. and it was fantastic.
It's called Royal Bavaria, and it's in the absolute middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I recommend anyone finds yourself in Oklahoma City for a layover, just drive a few miles south. It's worth it. They had a 10-barrel copper-clad brewing system built in Germany, which is just exactly like we have here in the end. Maybe that inspired me to open the brewery we have or use the equipment we have. I wanted to know how they were making beer that tasted like that. So I'd kind of gone, this is backing up a little bit from the Boulder story. This is before I even met the people from Boulder. I wanted to know how beer like that can be made. You know, German lager from the source is just incredible. And I still think about the smells and the taste of that restaurant and that brewery. So anyway, I started to get closer to that group. They sold at some point in the early 2000s, and I got to know the new owner and the new brewer at the time as they were transitioning. And I got to go there and help deconstruct these old German recipes. And we're brewing and we're doing tank cleaning and we're milling grain and it's not a huge brewery at all. But when it's just a couple guys on small equipment, you get to know a lot about production brewing. Fast forward from that, there's a big brewery in Oklahoma City that I got connected with through that network. And I was washing kegs and hand canning inordinate amounts of product through rudimentary equipment. We had a boil kettle that was, I can mention this brewery because, you know, they did what they did because they didn't have quite the resources they do today. It's Coop, COOP, or Co-op, depending on how you might see. It looks like Co-op, but we always say Coop. They're a great brewery, fantastic IPA brewery in Oklahoma, and I wanted to get to know them.
I should add that you are doing this at the same time as you're still finishing your PhD. So normally you would leave it at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
to drive up into the city to go to Coop, and then you'd come back, and then you'd actually go.
I would be filling kegs and washing kegs. One side of the room, I'd be washing kegs, maybe, you know, one at a time, obviously, on a keg washing machine. But on the other side of the room, I have 8 of them filling at a time. So I'm over here filling, and I'm washing, and filling, and I'm washing. And this is all before I go to class at 8 to finish my dissertation and so on and so on.
So was this a part-time job, or was this sort of your way of becoming an apprentice?
Yes and yes. Yeah. It was my way. I said, hey, I'll work for free. I need the experience. And they put me on the lowest rate, because breweries don't have money. You know, it's not like they can just for the, but you know, I earned the money, and I was milling grain, and I can explain this in a future episode, but we were hand canning in crazy amounts of beer there. It was a laborious experience. The boil kettle was either on or off. So I was in charge of running the boil, because if you left it on a second too long, it would shoot out the manway. And if it's not long enough, you don't get the IPA you're looking for. So you put the scrub at the bottom of that pile to do that.
I've known many people that have gotten PhDs.
Yeah.
And the process seems horrible.
It's a long,
like it basically consumes your entire life for several years.
Many.
The fact that you're doing this in the morning seems to indicate, at least at the back of your mind or sometime, that this is really kind of what you wanted to be doing.
Oh, absolutely.
At that point, we knew by then that you were going to finish your PhD, but you weren't going to stay in science. I use quotes around that, because science is beer and beer is science. But you, the goal is...
That's a t-shirt, by the way.
Go team. We knew that you were going to complete the PhD, but that then you were going to move on into the brewing industry.
So for a lot of reasons, obviously, you want to finish your PhD. I mean, I think it was 9 years.
Eight.
Okay.
So I took 7, you took 8.
8 years. And this is my postgraduate career, it was 8. It included, effectively, 3 years of professional researcher in Boulder. So even though I hadn't yet received my doctorate, I was sort of, in some sense, passed ahead of the publications to make that happen. There were a couple of publications, though, that I still lacked. So that's what made it difficult, is I had to continue to finish those while I know I'm training to be a brewer. I know this is what I want to do.
You were actually writing one of them while you were in beer school.
I was in brewing school. I was thinking about this yesterday, having a conversation and remembering how much shit that we have done. Like the same time oftentimes. And I finished my 5th publication while I was studying microbiology and chemistry to become a master brewer under the Institute of Brewing and Distilling. So my mind was being just pulled in so many directions to think that I was able to do that. And I think it was only because we lived apart at that time. I lived in California and Allison lived in Oklahoma, that I think both of us professionally were doing quite well at that moment.
That's true. No distraction.
Mm-hmm. And she was taking on her first research position, teaching position, post having her PhD. And here I was still writing a 5th publication post having written my dissertation.
But you had also, I mean, there's quite a, research is never done. You just kind of walk away, but you had already done the work. And so
it wasn't just hit print. It takes some analysis and some work. Yeah, so we've done a lot of multitasking. Gary's right. I think that was symbolically the time when we decided to open the brewery, when I'm cleaning kegs at 4 in the morning before wrapping up the last few pages on my dissertation same day.
To get into beer school, so the Master Brewers program at UC Davis, it was like a 2-year waiting list. And then you were on the list to get in 2014.
Yep.
And then they called and said, guess what? There's someone that dropped off the list. You are now in this year. Can you come? And we knew about a month before you left for Davis, I think. We had about a month to plan.
So we had the opportunity and we took it. It wasn't just because it was faster. It sped us along by at least a year, if not two. But the way that program works is if you turn down a slot, you get sort of filed back. Could have been even longer. So this is an opportunity, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot about it later, but this is one of the best brewing schools in the world. And I applied you needed a physics degree, a biology degree, a chemistry degree,
some sort of science
degree.
Background.
Needed something STEM in order to get in on these programs.
And it was a 6-month intensive, or maybe 5-month intensive. session or
it was 6 months. It was a class of 39, and I was the only non-chemist or biologist, to Gary's point. It was a tough change of career for me, and I'm nothing if not tenacious. And what's the word of that, Allison? How would you describe me when I fixate on
I have
on
a lot goal? Of words to describe
yeah, I know.
You.
I shouldn't open that up to the wide answer, but I had decided I'm doing this. I can do this. I'm not going to be as good as of a chemist or biologist as everyone in this room, but I can learn what I need to learn in order to make up that difference. When it came to the engineering side of that program, they were the ones that were sweating bullets. And I was fine with that. It took me 2 years to pass all the examinations to get it's the Institute of Brewing and Distilling. They're based in London, and they were operating out of UC Davis. They were operating one of their testing programs, one of their training programs. And I made it through engineering, and I made it through physics, and I actually made it through chemistry. Those modules, which were 15 pages each, a handwritten, 3 days or 1 day per module. But I didn't make it through the biology for a full year. And so...
You took the test twice, I think?
I took it a second time, and they only offer it once per year. And we had actually moved to this town of Appleton.
You were a physics professor at Lawrence.
And I was a professor at Lawrence University. And I'm kind of meandering here, but I guess I'm just trying to say that I made a lot of commitments, starting with that job cleaning kegs 4 a.m. to open a brewery. And I was going to get it done. And finishing my PhD in a lot of ways was a step toward opening a brewery, because you have to show investors that you will finish something as insurmountable as that was. It was tough. You know, as Gary points out, it's a commitment, and you can't just wish yourself a dissertation. You have to be all in. So I hope that doesn't come across as though I was just checking a box when I got the dissertation. I love that life. I love that career. And beer just kind of sucked me in, and it was just the next chapter.
It was funny, though, when we told my parents, your parents, like, hey, you know, I think he's going to stop doing the whole NASA thing. We're going to switch over, and he's going to go and be a brewer. They're like, what? They were very upset by this. And then, you know, come to find out that there's actually so much more science in beer than anyone could ever really imagine. It really does make a better pint.
I get asked a lot, what is it like not teaching? What's it like not being a scientist? And I'm still a teacher. I'm still a scientist. I have a different classroom. I have a different venue, a different topic. You don't turn that off. A physicist is a problem solver. That's what it is. And if anyone wants to understand what physics is, I always describe it that way.
Yeah, don't go off Big Bang Theory.
Let's pause here, and then when we come back in the next episode, I want to talk more about beer school as opposed to, you know, there's the art and science of brewing, and then how eventually you came to open McFleshman's.
Perfect.